independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Money hunting, EJ. With all due respect, y'all know nothing about ball. The AFC South is wide open right now, and you want to trade a top three player at their position. Here's the thing with Laremy Tunsil. And look, people would argue that he was snubbed this year from being an All-Pro. I don't think he was snubbed. I think that he was in the conversation. He had a really good year. If Laremy Tunsil was an All-Pro, who was not? See, that's when people always talk about snubs. Like, oh, he was snubbed. Okay, well, then who are you taking off the team? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Okay, then he probably wasn't snubbed. I don't think Laremy Tunsil was snubbed. I think Laremy Tunsil is a top five left tackle, not a top one left tackle. Laremy Tunsil has never been a top one left tackle. If we're calling a spade a spade, Laremy Tunsil has never been an All-Pro in his entire career. And I'm not saying Laremy Tunsil is a bad football player. He's obviously not. I'm saying he's a top five left tackle. He's really, really good. Laremy Tunsil also, this past year, was the first year in his entire career where he played in every single game. Think about that.
Right.
Chew on that for a little bit. Now, he's had games where he's, you know, 14 games, 15 games. The 2021 season was the year that he only – like, the only year where he missed a lot of games. But he's only made it through 1 year with perfect attendance, which keep that in mind, too. Everybody's like, well, you know, the rookie quarterback needs a left tackle. He also needs a left tackle that's going to be on the field, right? Like, if we're talking about how important that left tackle position is – being on the field matters.
No question, and that's the thing. His agent is going to be the one pushing the narrative that he started every game he's played in the NFL. That's a neat way of spinning the fact that he's also missed a ton of time with little nagging injuries and being dinged up. And that's not something that they want to talk about, but that's something that you're going to want to talk about for us that don't know ball, like you who knows all, when you're not thinking about the fact that you don't want David Carr part two. You don't want whoever you have playing quarterback for the long term getting their brains beat in because Laremy's got a hangnail and he don't feel like playing. He's got his money, he's all set, but he doesn't have to be out there anymore because he did what he needed to do to get paid. You need someone that's going to peak when your team peaks and at the same time be available whenever you need him to play. And those are things that have popped up in the past with him, both injuries and his ability and desire and want to be out there consistently, that you're not going to want to deal with when you're trying to develop a quarterback, an offense, and an entire new way of thinking from a franchise perspective with a new coach trying to turn the corner and rebuild.
We're going to push the Mailbag Monday to 2:15. So get your questions in for our Mailbag Monday at 2:15, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Austin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Austin?
Hey, guys. Big fans.
Thank you.
So I exactly understand where you all are coming from with Tunsil, especially with, like, you know, obviously we're not going to be competing for the next few years. I get that. Right? But I also understand, George, with his point of, like, you don't want another David Carr scenario. And so my thing is that, like, I'm in the camp of, like, yes, pay him now. I understand, obviously, he is a somewhat of a flight risk. I mean, they really should have included some protection in that contract, making sure that he has to play so many certain games per year to earn some of that guaranteed money. But the thing is, guys, okay, let's say it sounds like y'all are in the camp of, like, drafting a tackle this year and not trying to make it work with,
Titus Howard.
With the right tackle. Yeah, moving him over. So my thing is that, you know, okay, even if you draft a tackle this year, right, you're going to now have to deal with the scenario of paying both the tackle, let's say if he is your long-term tackle, and the quarterback at the same exact time and taking out a good amount of your cap at that time, mm-hmm. right? And again, we won't know what's going to happen in, again, 4 to 5 years. I mean, we won't know that, again, if Young or Stroud is going to be the quarterback of the future. We won't know that tackle will be, you know, the tackle of the future, right? So it's just, I think it's a more of a safer play with taking Tunsil now. And then you can still draft in 3 years. You can still find someone, or you can still even move up in the draft to get your left tackle of the future.
The thing, Austin, though, is you lose the opportunity cost of an additional first-round pick whenever you think the first-round pick is more on the trajectory of this franchise than a 29-year-old left tackle that's going to be into closer to his mid-30s by the time the contract comes up. A couple of the salary cap things, too, and Austin brings up a good point with, like, okay, well, if you draft a rookie quarterback and a rookie left tackle, you're in a situation now where you put yourself in a little bit of, you know, a financial quandary. We're trying to figure out how to pay both quarterback and left tackle. Here's the other issue, though. Like, when Laremy Tunsil's contract runs out, this current contract that he's on, well, you got yourself a little bit of a money like scenario there, too, paying Laremy Tunsil another contract right around the time that you're coming up with a rookie quarterback. Also, you're currently in a little bit of a salary cap problem. Like Joe mentioned earlier, Titus Howard's about to play on the fifth-year option. So you're talking about potentially having to play two tackles, pretty high money too. So the money, here's where I'm at with like money issues and the salary cap issues. I'm always in favor of salary cap issues.
Yeah,
because if you're in a salary cap issue, it means that you have good players and you're having to make good, like, tough decisions on good players.
I'm sitting here biting through my lip because this is exactly what general managers are supposed to do.
Yep.
Get it right. Evaluate talent. Draft the right talent. If you draft the right talent, well, good on you. In 3, 4, 5 years, when your quarterback and your left tackle both come up for renegotiation, guess what? That means you did your job because you found the right guys to do the right job. Now, going forward, you might have to make a decision between one or the other, and that's a tough decision that you have to make, but that doesn't preclude you from saying, I did the right thing. I got two guys. I evaluated them correctly. I got them to play at a level where they're deserving now to get paid big money. Now, if there's a way that I can get creative to retain both of them, of course I want to do that. But if I have to make a decision, there should be value with the player that I have to move on from that I can still get something in return. And I also have to evaluate from the standpoint of, if my quarterback is kicking ass, then I know that, like the Kansas City Chiefs, you're going to be in a position where guys are going to want to play for you, other guys are going to play for less money for you, and you can have other alternatives that are a lot easier to find and fix than it would be if you keep trying to shy away from situations because you're afraid, maybe it's something I got to pay that guy. Well, that's what this is all about, maximize the best talent you can get and then worry about having to pay him at the – and if it's, they come up at the same time, then you're going to have to get creative to find solutions, but it's an easier problem to solve because of where you are as a quarterback and a team.
But isn't Nick Caserio maximizing his draft picks right now by paying Laremy Tunsil for 4 more years? This team is depleted with talent. Like, you could argue going into the draft, when you say what's their biggest need at 12, you could give all of us 10 options, and you're probably right. So, like, you've solved one of your problems by this contract, and you can fix other things. You can get Lucas Van Ness. You can get Miles Murphy or a pass rusher because you don't have that either.
But here's the thing that you're, like, missing out on this, Joe, is, again, like, the contract is a big part of this, but the draft pick that you could have gotten in return is the bigger part of it because now you're adding a draft pick that you can use to help this team. Because you talked about, you know, Laremy Tunsil fixes your need for the next 4 years. I don't really care too much about the next 4 years. Like, this team, to me, isn't a playoff team until, at minimum, 2024. I think a first-round draft pick fits the trajectory of this organization far more than Laremy Tunsil fits the trajectory of this organization.
Well, here's the other thing, Georgie. When you look at this, do you think that Laremy Tunsil has reached his prime yet? Or is he going to reach his prime in the next 4 years?
Hey, he's probably right in it.
Yeah, I think he's hit it.
I think he's already hit it.
Yeah.
So I think that now you're going to be worried about a offensive lineman that's the highest paid offensive lineman in the game on the decline that already had what he was already playing for what he was motivated by. Now that he has it, how much more motivation can he find? Because to Jeremy's point, if this team is truly going to still have to kind of navigate through some choppy waters to get to where you're trying to go, and he sees that and he realizes, I've already got my cash, how much are you really going to get out of Laremy Tunsil for the next two, three, 4 years as you get to where your quarterback's developing and the team is trying to take the next step? That's what I've been harping on.
And the thing where I'm at with this too is, like, I'm honestly sick and tired of this opinion of the Texans need to be banging down all the doors to be really good next year and in 2024. Why? So they could go 500? Like, what? Why are you spending all of these resources on all of these veterans to be 500? What's the best way for the Houston Texans to be, like, a championship contender? Because that's the goal, right? Like, Caserio should be trying to build a championship contender. He shouldn't try to be bringing in all these veterans to be a 9-8 football team and barely make the playoffs. Like, the goal is that he's Jeff Luno and he has this long-term plan to build a golden era of the Houston Texans. That should always be the plan. I don't want to settle for a mediocrity and a wild card spot and then be knocked out in the wild card round and live the Bill O'Brien days all over again. I want to build a champion. And if I'm building a champion, signing all these veteran free agents and getting them all the snaps and getting them all the reps derails your development, derails what you should be. So, like, everything that this organization is doing should be focused on young football players.
Yep.
And some people would say, well, you know, keeping Laremy Tunsil around is focused on Bryce Young. And
yes.
I can understand and respect that. I get that. I totally get that. But is that, does that have more weight and more value than getting a top 20 first-round pick? I don't think that it does. And that's where I'm different than you, Joe.
But it's about alignment too, right? I mean, that's why I keep saying it's got to align. Like, everybody's kind of maturing at the same time. They're ready to take the next step at the right time, and they're all kind of in the same time frame. Tunsil's in a different time frame based on his status in the league and how many years he's played than every guy that you're trying to bring in. And to the, I was going to say something I probably shouldn't say, but to the guy that said that we don't know ball, the South is wide open. If you missed it, the Jags did really well last year, and they didn't get worse.
Yeah,
right?
I
think the Colts are in a better spot than the Texans are, too.
Completely.
I'm not sitting here like trying to say that signing Laremy Tunsil is to help you win football games. I think it is for the betterment of your franchise. But I'll ask you guys this. Like, you keep talking about wanting a first-round pick and how it can help the team. You trust Nick Casario to get that right?
You better. Like, if you're talking about building a champion, no, I'm down on Nick Casario's approval rating. But because I'm down on Nick Casario's approval rating doesn't mean, oh, I'm going to be safe and conservative and just be happy with Laremy Tunsil and not trade it for a first.
Well, I'm conservative.
Everything that I think is about the Houston Texans building a championship organization. And building a championship organization, we've seen it in this city. It was with Jeff Luno. And Jeff Luno built up a champion how? Through the draft and with young players, and then when the team was able to start winning is whenever he supplemented those young players with veterans around them. That's how you build a champion.
And
that's
I don't even care about
the Texans need to be on.
The organization as a whole, it's a team that and the roster, and you need, when you're looking at trying to develop that, you've got to be shrewd, you've got to be smart. You get that first round pick, it may be used to get the guy. It may be used as an asset, as part of something, some other means to go trade for or move up in the draft to get a guy. But at the same time, you're developing them, and you're looking at it from a cultural standpoint and from a coaching standpoint, starting with D'Amico and his staff, that a guy that has a better fit, a guy that's going to fit the system they're going to run, the quarterback they're going to protect, the running backs they're going to block for, and that at the same time, they're all going to be coming together and kind of having continuity. Tunsil's the kind of guy that doesn't scream continuity. He screams, it's not about the team, it's about me and my money and what I want to do when I want to do it. And that's not what you're going to try to do with a young roster.
713-780-ESPN. We'll do the Mailbag Monday a little bit later, but you can start to get your questions in, queue them up. We'll have them queued up. 713-780-3776. But Andy and Mark want to get in here about Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil, this is a good contract. The opportunity cost of a first, does that bother you as well? How do you feel about Nick Casario after a very busy weekend? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 8029. Do you really think a competent NFL team is going to trade a first-rounder for Tunsil? I know two things. I know Albert Breer said that the Texans, who weren't shopping Tunsil, they were listening on Tunsil, could have gotten a first-round pick for Laremy Tunsil. That from Albert Breer. And the second, look, reports have been wrong all the time. So, like, that could be a very well, who knows, point of view. But the second point to me is where, like, the conviction is. The second point to me is where there's something tangible and where there's something that is a fact. Laremy Tunsil just got $25 million a year for the Houston Texans. 75 over 3 years, $60 million guaranteed. More money than a left tackle makes. So, yeah, I think if a left tackle is getting paid that much money, that a left tackle could be traded for a first-round draft pick.
The other thing is, you're assuming when you hear first-round pick that you're looking like it needs to be, you know, a certain spot in the first round. The fact is that Kansas City would have considered a trade. Cincinnati is always looking to try and upgrade their offensive line, was looking for a left tackle. I think they just signed one recently.
Yeah, they signed Orlando Brown.
Yeah, but I think that there were teams out there that were good teams that were looking for tackle help, and they would be willing to trade. You look at what the Rams did the year they were in go-for-it mode. If they had a hole or a weakness, they were going to do whatever means necessary to mortgage the farm to get to that final destination of Super Bowl and beyond. And so teams were willing to trade and to consider trades because they were, it wasn't about their first-round picks like the Rams were giving away like candy on Halloween. It was about making the team better right now when they were maximizing when their entire team was coming into their prime. So I think that whether it was Albert Breer or somebody else, I think Tunsil, definitely the market was a first-round pick. And it, you know, sure, some teams would probably more ideally like to give up a second. But even still, that's good capital, draft capital for a team rebuilding.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out there for Andy. Andy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Andy?
Hey, guys. Here's the deal. If you want to get a first-rounder for a Tunsil, and you go get your tackle, right, for one thing, you don't know nothing about him. You don't know if he's going to be a solid guy in the NFL. Look at Cleveland Browns. How many quarterbacks did they pick in the last?
They picked a lot of bad ones. We lost your connection, Andy, but I think we get the gist of your conversation. The draft picks are unknown.
Sure.
Which is fair. That's totally fair.
Look draft at Dillard. Andre Dillard. The year the Texans took Howard, everybody was talking Dillard was – the best tackle that was available. The Texans should have traded up to get him. Mm-hmm. All this, there, and he's been a complete bust with the Eagles. So yeah. You're right that you can swing and miss. That's when I said the talent evaluation is as important as, you know, getting the first round pick.
Tunsil is a more known commodity. No one's arguing that.
Sure.
No one's arguing that Laremy Tunsil doesn't make the Houston Texans better in 2023, maybe even better in 2024, maybe even better in 2025. No one's really arguing that. We're talking about the big picture. How do the Houston Texans get to where they want to be? And what do you want the Houston Texans to be too? Like, you should ask yourself that question, because I am operating from the point of view that I want a general manager that's going to build up a Super Bowl contender, not some general manager that's going to be comfortable with the Bill O'Brien days where you go 10-6 and win the AFC South, or 9-7 and win the AFC South, and say AFC South champions, Brian, and then you're ousted in the wild card. Like, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in building a Super Bowl champion. If you're going to sign a bunch of veteran free agents, you're not willing to make bold moves, you're just going to be safe and conservative, then that's what you're going to get. You're going to get AFC South champions, Brian, 9-7, and then you're going to get your butts kicked in the wild card round. Like, somebody just texted this, and I think this is a really good conversation, 9395. If you have all the youth, you end up with the Rockets. Look at that youthful team. That's from Spencer. Here's what I'll ask you, though. Like, do you think that, look, this Rockets nucleus has a long way to go. They're all very young. Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, Alpi Shingun. We don't really want to include Kevin Porter Jr. in that conversation, blah, 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 blah. And that team is not as good as the Houston Rockets when they had Luis Scola and Carl Landry and Mucci Norris. I think Aaron Brooks was somewhere around that time.
Yeah.
When the Rockets were going 41-41 every single year. That core of Rockets were better than this current team in terms of winning games in the regular season and winning games just basically with who they were. They won 41 games. This team's not touching 41 games. But of those two units, which one has a better chance to reach a much higher apex? This core of young Rockets. I'm not trying to be 41-41. I'm sick of the days of Bill O'Brien. I'm sick of AFC South banners and getting my butts kicked in the AFC wildcard round. I want to build a sustainable winner. And do the Astros add more pressure to the Houston Texans because they're in this golden era? Yeah, they probably do. I want Caserio to be Luno. I don't want him to be making the safe plays and, you know, aspiring for mediocrity and aspiring to go 10-7 in a bad division and lose in the wild card round. That's not what I want. I want a team that can contend for a Super Bowl, and I'm willing to sacrifice the immediate future for that overall better good.
We've talked about sustainable winning at a certain level, and you're right. This city, more so than almost any city that you can point to, has already been there, done that, and said, yeah, we've had a winner, so to speak. But our ideas of winning are different than most. We're not a mid-market, small-market team that's just happy to get to the playoffs, and that's a feather in our cap that we'll take with that banner that you're talking about. We're a team that has aspirations of being where the Oilers always wanted to go, but at least kind of got close enough to get you to where you believe they could get there and do that again, and that is to a conference championship game, to a Super Bowl, and then to win a Super Bowl. And those are the things that it's basically that or bust when you start talking about a rebuild. It's not getting back to where you once were and then capping it at winning a winning divisions or winning one playoff game. And so you need this nucleus to blend and come together and keep adding pieces. And whether you swing and miss on the tackle in the draft or not, you have the assets to do what you need to do. And I don't know that anybody's can't miss, but that's why when your talent evaluation comes into this, and we can say, look, the jury's still out on the first round picks of a year ago, but for Nick Caserio. But we've also seen some pretty good picks that he's made over the year or year and a half, 2 years and two drafts, where he's gotten a lot right, where he's figured out guys that can play in this league. And that's what you're obviously relying on. They got the right guy in the general manager's position, and with him and his staff, you can find the right guy to play left tackle. But he's also gotten creative with the trade with Tampa and with some of the moves he's been able to make, to where that's part of why you've got to – it's hard to right now. I get it. But you have to put your trust in Caserio and his staff that they can evaluate talent enough to get the next Laremy Tunsil that's more in line with when the rest of this team becomes good.
But see, I this is where I mainly disagree, is when this team is going to be good, right, is that we always talk about, and we have since the Super Bowl, like, this is your window. A rookie quarterback contract really is your best window. Look what the Eagles have done. They were able to add veterans, big-name pieces, big contracts, because Jalen Hurts was cheap. Like, we saw NFL teams are doing that all over the place. So, in theory, the day you draft Bryce Young, that's your best window, because it's the easiest to win a Super Bowl and have the most playoff success.
But now the argument flips.
So you know the roster's not set to do that.
The argument flips, though. The argument flips, though, because, like, we're sitting here saying Trey Tunsil for a first-round draft pick, and everybody's saying, well, it's an unknown quality whenever you draft a player, but you're not going to say that for a quarterback?
I am saying that.
Quarterbacks in the first round have a much higher bust rate than any other position.
100%.
So I'm talking out of both sides of your mouth now.
No, I'm not. Because
you're not specifically. I'm talking about, like, big picture. Big picture is saying, well, I'm not going to trade Tunsil for a first. It's an unknown commodity. But I'm going to bet the house on a rookie quarterback. Dude, what? Go look at first round rookie quarterbacks selected in the last decade. That's not a sound bet.
It's not. It's definitely not. The big thing is that when you look at the tackle market and through the draft and you want to find a franchise left tackle, most of them are taken in the top 10. You have Rashawn Slater.
Tunsil wasn't, but he had a gas mask.
He doesn't count. He would have been like
in Seattle.
He would have been like the second pick in the draft. But like you have these elite left tackles going early in the draft. Rashawn Slater with the Chargers, Penei Sewell with the Lions. Mm-hmm. Like, you have great left tackles. So you're kind of like out of that range. I just think, like, you're going to have a rookie quarterback contract. First of all, this salary also, we haven't touched on this, I don't think is going to look that bad. You're going to see the YouTube TV money come in here in just the next two seasons with the new Sunday Ticket, over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. We are going to see an explosion of the salary cap. Laremy Tunsil is going to be the first of many. Those guys I just mentioned, Rashawn Slater, Penei Sewell, Christian Darrisaw from the Vikings, when their contracts come up, they're going to be above Laremy Tunsil. Just like Patrick Mahomes one day, his contract is going to look like a joke. Like, Laremy Tunsil's contract is going to have value in just 2 years.
That's why I'm not that mad about the contract. What sets me off is that you could have got a first rounder. Like, I'm mad at the opportunity cost. If I didn't see that Albert Breer article, or if Albert Breer didn't answer that question saying that Laremy Tunsil could have fetched the Houston Texans a first rounder, I'd be okay today. I'd be good today, because I understand all your points. I don't disagree. Like, Laremy Tunsil makes this team a better football team in 2023. No doubt about it. That Laremy Tunsil makes this team a better football team in 2024. No doubt about it. Now, after 2024, you might have a conversation. You might have a little bit of a debate or a little bit of a back and forth. But what upsets me is that the Texans, instead of trading Tunsil for a first, when Tunsil, we think, has some, like, question marks, and then they gave him all that money. That's what bothers me. If I never saw that, if Albert Breer never said that, I'd be totally okay with this contract.
But, and Joe, wouldn't you have been okay if you did nothing with him this year?
And that, I think, is actually the worst thing you could do.
I would agree with that.
Like,
why? Because you get no value for him?
Yeah, you had to make a choice. You either had to pay him or trade him.
Yeah, I agree completely. Because this is where his value is at its highest. Like, that's why I'm mad about the Cooks thing. Is because Caserio waited and waited and waited. And, like, when are we going to be good? We need Brandon Cooks whenever we're going to be good. And then he trades him for two late-round draft picks. Like, the Brandon Cooks situation is embarrassing. Now, we saw it coming. Like, we knew that Brandon Cooks was not going to give you much. We knew he wasn't going to fetch much in return. So, like, we knew it was coming. We just made it official over the weekend. But the way that they handled Brandon Cooks from the start to now is a terrible look for Nick Caserio. Awful.
I'm saying to just the way Joe is talking about, you know, either locking him up or not, my question would be, then you just, you can still take phone calls and listen, but the market's drying up for what teams are willing to do for right now. You can take it through the trade deadline, whatever, but he's going to play for your rookie quarterback and protect him this year because he's playing for his next contract. Then you still have multiple first-round picks to where if he's going to walk or it's not going to work out, then you can – and it's tougher. I get it. The trade possibly is probably out the window. But then you can draft another left tackle and or use free agency and move on, but you're not locked into a guy that's locked into all the things we know he is and be a lot older than what the rest of your roster is going to look like.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to the NCAA tournament. We'll go home with our Mailbag Monday at 2:45. You can get your Mailbag Monday questions in, 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But how about March Madness so far? How about the Houston Cougars advancing to the Sweet 16 for the fourth tournament in a row? And how about the NCAA tournament at large, getting their first ever first and second round highest ratings that they've seen ever? 713-780-3776, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's a great pleasure of mine to tell you about Gentleben for a variety of reasons. At the very top of that list is because I believe what I say. I'm transparent, even if it's not popular, right? Well, Gentleben is both. Gentleben is the best, and they are very popular. They're very good across the board with all of their liquors. The vodka, best in the state. Gin, best in the market. And bourbon, well, they won the double platinum winner at the prestigious Ascot Awards, so they got the resume that goes to what I'm saying. Gentleben uses their innovative Percedo craft technology that makes them better across the board. Purity, aroma, taste, they sweep it all. You'll love what's not in Gentleben. Their purification process is unrivaled. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Don't labor through your drink. Enjoy it. Savor it. You can do that with Gentleben. You can order online right now, gentleben.com, or stop at your favorite liquor store on the way home. Total Wine, Specs, many of the other local stores. If they don't have it, demand that they carry Gentleben. Also, coming this season, inside of Minute Maid Park, Astros games, Gentleben Bar will be inside of Minute Maid Park right behind the Crawford boxes. So if you're going to go watch some Houston Astro baseball, how about a little bourbon in baseball, vodka in baseball, gin in baseball with a Gentleben Bar inside of Minute Maid Park? Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentleben.
Turn down for what?
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We got some stuff to give away. The American singer-songwriter Sam Hunt, love his work, is making his way to Houston for the Summer on the Outskirts tour. Join Sam Hunt with special guests Brett Young and Lily Rose coming to Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion on Friday, August 18th. Caller 10 to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to see the show. Tickets go on sale this Friday, March 24th. At LiveNation.com. You'll love the show. Hopefully you win. If you can't, well, just purchase some tickets. LiveNation.com. Good value there. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. First weekend of the NCAA tournament coming to a close. So it's down to 16 teams. Cougars making the fourth straight Sweet 16. Only two teams have done that in the country, by the way. Houston and, you want to guess? It's a powerhouse.
Okay.
They're still in the Sweet 16.
They are. Obviously. Yeah, I'm trying to
think. Northwest.
Northwest. Michigan State.
No, very northwest. As almost as northwest as you'll go.
Oh, Gonzaga?
Yeah, Gonzaga's made 8. Gonzaga's made 8 straight.
That's a good game
Sweet
last
16s.
Night. Late.
I can't believe they've made 8. That's hard to do.
Yep. Yep, that's hard like the Braves or the Astros. That's something that when you look back at it after the fact, it has more impact and you go, "Damn, that's impressive." And coming off of the loss of Chet Holmgren and guys that like Suggs that were leaving early, the fact that they were able to continually kind of add pieces, and this year wasn't, you know, great in terms of the talent they put around Drew Timmy, and the fact that Drew Timmy stayed. But I mean, boy, I'll tell you what, Mark Few should get a lot more credit. He's again a guy dedicated to being there, but he could have named his ticket and his price before. He still could if he wanted to.
Yeah, I'm a big Drew Timmy fan. Like watching him play.
Good footwork,
not,
man.
Yeah, really good footwork. Not a tremendous athlete like you would expect, but he gets it done. So I like watching him play. It was a good game last night, them edging TCU. Also a bad beat with TCU knocking down that three late. Yep. A lot of people were upset about that. But Houston defeats Auburn, fourth straight Sweet 16. You know, I went to the halftime of that game, Blinkers, and it was a very pro-Auburn crowd. Let's call it what it is in Birmingham, 17,000.
Was it? I was going to ask you about that because there were people saying, I think Lance was talking about this morning, that a lot of Alabama fans were there rooting against Auburn, and that's why I wanted to ask you, because it sounded to me like it was very pro-Auburn.
Whenever Auburn had a run and things like that, it was very, very loud for Auburn. I think whenever Auburn started to go through some struggles in the second half is when you would start to hear a little bit of Alabama jeers, but not much. Like, the roar of the Auburn crowd was far louder than anything else. It helped them a lot, I think, in that first half when they went on that big run. But the Cougars were down in the first half because there's a couple of things to get to here. First was the adversity they were facing, you know, the injuries that they had. You know, Sasser and Shedd playing through injuries. They were down by 10 at the half. And, like, my thought at halftime, because Auburn, it was a close game the entire first half, and they went on that huge run over, like, the last 2.5, 3 minutes where they were knocking down threes. They were getting shots to fall when they were falling to the floor. They were shooting 55%. And I was thinking at the half, I'm like, okay, you know, I think that the shooting is going to calm down. I think it's going to cool down a bit. I think that the Cougars will be fine. And I was thinking, just make it a 5-point game with 10 minutes to play. Like, cut the deficit in half halfway through the second half. That was kind of my line of thinking. And then all of a sudden, before the 16-minute timeout, the Cougars were within two. I was like, wow, what a start to the second half. I thought it was a second half for the ages. And then Tremont Mark, T-March, as they're calling him, was unbelievable after Marcus Sasser picked up his fourth foul.
I just think it's the staple of what good coaches are able to do. And especially now, I was thinking about it this morning when I was walking the dogs and thinking about, like, the way Samson has come on our show before and talked about it. Look, when I'm recruiting, I'm telling the guy like it is. And if you don't want to be coached and you don't want to be disciplined and you don't want to be held to standards, then you don't want to play for me. And the fact that he gets kids with all the silver spoon fed, you know, hyper blown up and coddled to athletes that are coming out these days with NIL and all the possibilities to just get that super speed line to the NBA and not taking any responsibility in the process. You look at the way he's recruited, the guys he's gotten at play, and then at halftime to be able to have that calming influence to not panic, to not worry, but to put a plan in place, to make adjustments. So right out of the gates in the second half, they get a bucket or two. They start sending the message, we're not going to go down quick. We're not going away. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be tough to beat. And then they just take advantage of their strengths, and Sasser and Shedd do what they do until they get in foul trouble. But like you mentioned, the fact that we've talked all season long about the depth of this team, that there are five guys that are capable of scoring double figures and taking you to where you need to go, and the fact that you had, you know, another guy step up and you had other guys do their roles and their parts, and this is with their arguably their two best players on the bench, but they didn't just kind of sustain the run. They added to it. They kept building to the point where Samson kept going, well, you know, I'm at the 8-minute mark. I'm taking him out. I hope I can sit him for a couple minutes. Finally, at the 3-plus-minute mark, you're going, is he going to put him back in, and is he going to just have to put only Shedd in and not even worry about Sasser's injury, because his team was not only able to sustain the, you know, and stay in the game, but to build the lead to a point where they were comfortable.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, quite honestly, a legendary performance by Tremont Mark, because Sasser picks up his fourth, and you're like, oh, my goodness, what does this mean? And then 4 minutes later, Jamal Shedd picks up his fourth, and you're like, oh, man, what does this mean? And Shedd had the quote said where he was, you know, scared as hell. And that fourth foul by Sasser, I mean, Auburn took the lead. Auburn took the lead on those two free throws. They were leading by 2 points whenever Sasser came off the floor. So it's like, actually, it's 3 points. They knocked in the third foul is whenever they made both free throws. His fourth foul, which came like a minute later, is when they took a 3-point lead. So they were down by 3 points. They're All-American coming off the floor. And then Tremont Mark just absolutely took over. He had 20 points in the second half, Blinkers. U of H defense gave up 23 points, which, you know, we didn't talk a lot about the Cougar defense against Northern Kentucky. All we were doing was looking at that embarrassing offensive effort, according to Paul Gallant. But Mark had 20 points in the second half. The U of H defense gave up 23 points in the second half. They made 4 shots in the second half, Auburn did. Auburn made 4 shots from the field in the second half. And of those 20 for Tremont Mark, 18 came in the final just under 11 minutes after Sasser picked up his fourth foul. And to your point, Tremon Mark outscored Auburn in that span, 18-16.
Yeah, he just, you know, he basically put the entire game on his shoulders. And, you know, I was a little surprised because of how good and steady the ball handling is between Sasser and Shedd. I thought because Mark was the primary ball handler in a lot of cases that they might put more full court or three quarters court pressure on to try and get the ball out of his hands and then try and deep freeze him to some point to where someone else had to beat him. But they didn't do that. And that's Bruce Pearl, because when he got past half court and he got the ball in his hands, he got whatever he wanted. And he has that innate ability to hang in the air to where he gets to a spot and he hangs. The defender's already up and back on the floor, and he's still on the way down putting up that one-handed shot in the lane that was so hyper-effective that he literally carried the entire team. And the bigs were doing their job. Like you said, the defense, which we said all along was their calling card that was going to work no matter what gym and what situation you're in, they can always do that. And when they get down and decide to really get in the trenches and get in your grill and stop you, they can give anybody fits, and especially kind of a helter-skelter offense like Auburn was playing, they ride emotion. But when you suck the emotion out of what they're trying to do, you suck the life out of them. They started missing free throws. They started turning the ball over. And all these guys that were telling, you know, everybody, oh, their bigs are too small early on, and Johnson, who was bumping his gums ever since he got into the tournament, realized things ain't as easy as they were for you in round one. You saw a big change in fortune and a total difference between the two teams. Auburn looked like they were scared and they were going to lose. Houston looked like, in everybody's eyes, there was no doubt they're going to win. And like you said, they were down when those two guys went out. It wasn't just keeping it a three-point game to get them back in the game.
Yeah.
It was building up a 10-point lead and basically sending the message, you're going home.
Outscored Auburn 50-23 in the second half. There was a writer, Nancy Armour, who said that the Cougars cost themselves the NCAA tournament by playing Sasser in the first round against Northern Kentucky. Coming on the next day when we did the show, I thought that Sasser should have played. I think it was important to understand where he was at, like kind of get a feel of what it's going to feel like playing an NCAA tournament game with that strained groin. I think if you hold Sasser out in that Northern Kentucky game, I think you got the same thing in the Auburn game of what we saw in the Northern Kentucky game.
Well, I don't
think
know.
Sasser plays 10-15 minutes. I thought it was critical that he played against NKU. I thought he needed to play in that first game. I thought that was a smart thing in hindsight. It obviously worked out.
I didn't, just because I thought they could get by Northern Kentucky without him and to make sure that he was as close to healthy as he could be. But I think that's why, no matter how much we rely on what's told to the media and everything else, the only people that truly know are those people inside that locker room and that training room, to know that that wasn't the look and the performance of a guy that had a full-blown groin strain, because I don't know anybody that can come back from a groin strain that quickly. But the fact that they did the right thing, the smart thing, they didn't push him too far. He knew his own body to not try and do things that could have actually aggravated and exacerbated the injury. And then, I we're going into that game not knowing what to expect of Sasser, and to come out and to drop 9 quick points and to show you, hey, look, all's good. He looks – and then, I guess to your point, the fact that at least he got that first game out of the way where he looked a little rusty and it just didn't look like himself, to where now suddenly the shot looks good, he feels good, he's not, you know, coming up short on jumpers – and the fact that he gave you the performance that he gave you should convince every Cougar fan he's going to be fine the rest of the way, and you should expect that he is, just like Shedd. And that's why when you look at it and you look at the landscape going, hey, all along it was about Alabama and Houston, and there's nothing to say that it shouldn't be that way going forward, because those two teams both have survived groin injuries to their best player and have a deep enough team and a talented enough roster to do what they need to do to just keep on moving through.
You know, it was important for him to know where he was at.
Yep.
And I think it was important for the team to know where they were at with him. 713-780-ESP and the HRMP listener line. All right, let's get to our mailbag Monday. Larry Tunsil pushed it across because it's such a good pass blocker. 713-780-3776. Your questions for the Killer Bees are mailbag Monday on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
For the Killer Bees, 713-780-ESPN. You can ask us whatever you want. 713-780-3776. K-12s ask, I've been dating a girl for 9 months. Do I go with her and her family to a gala and watch the Cougs Sweet 16 on my phone, or do I stay in my lucky spot and suffer the consequences?
Well, I think this is, I mean, is she the one? 9 months is something that you better start evaluating, you know, long and hard. Is she the forever your lady, or is she still, if it's still up in the air? If it's still up in the air, you go with the luck. I mean, you stick with the Cougs. But if you really firmly believe, like, this is the family that I need to impress and be around, then I think that you got to stick to the phone.
If you think she's the one, or if you have a question if she is the one, is the reason why you stay in your lucky spot and suffer the consequences. Because do you want to hitch your wagon? Do you want to be married to someone that drags you to a gala when your team's in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament? Got to ask yourself that question. So if this is an obvious answer. You stay in your lucky spot, you suffer the consequences, and if you were around the next day, if you live to see another day, then you probably know that she is the one. But it's an obvious, yeah, you're not going to the gala. You're watching your Cougars.
In a minute, 16. If she's the one, you are.
No, see, absolutely not, because if you go to the gala.
That's not true.
No, if she's the one. The one is going to allow you to watch the
game.
That's
false.
That's very false.
That is false.
Absolutely not. My wife lets me watch every single game.
Everyone's not like your wife, Jeremy. And people have to understand the circumstances and make appropriate decisions.
The real question is, if you go to the gala, if you're on your phone checking the game or watching on your phone, is that going to cause an issue? Because if she's cool with you checking the score and maybe watching on your phone, yeah, you're not in your lucky spot. But you're still actively involved watching the game in some way. That's the real question.
King of Twitch, she's the one. She can go to the gala herself.
You go to the gala, you could be in the get lucky spot. You go to the lucky spot, you ain't going anywhere.
You only get one Sweet 16 game a year.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes some people only get one chance to make a good first impression with the in-laws.
They've definitely met. They've definitely met.
Okay.
Like, there's no way this.
But the chance to see how they act out in public in a big kind of black tie affair. That's a big deal.
Does the potential in-laws, if the dad had a choice to stay home and watch the game, if you're on the same wavelength, then you're okay to stay home. But if he's not a sports guy, you have to go. Otherwise, he'll never approve.
About this backwards, man. Because look,
this is
who you're going to be married with for the rest of your life.
Right.
This is who you're married with for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So is this person that you're hitching your wagon to, you're married to for the rest of your life, forever, if you believe that you should be married forever, if you're married to this person forever, you are committing to galas over top five sporting events for the season. No, that's not the one.
Once you're married, you can change your entire thought process.
I'm going to be honest, I'm that. Like, I've lost things because my wife does not like sports. There are times where I lose out these arguments.
My wife is actually very considerate of my love of sports, and she is somewhat of a sports fan. But I think that you don't want your in-laws looking at you in a negative light for the rest of your life, and that factors in heavily.
If the Bears don't play on Thanksgiving, I don't watch Thanksgiving football typically.
Because they don't watch
sports.
Oh, that's disgusting. Disgusting.
Look, it's just a reality. Sometimes the situation you're in.
Soft. That's what I'm saying. Pena says, is peanut butter supposed to go on one side of the bread or both sides on a PB&J? And what's the best meat for a street taco?
Wait, time out. Both sides of a PB&J?
So do you go PB and J on both buns?
No. Oh, both insides.
Peanut butter on one side.
Like one side
of
each piece of bread.
Peanut butter on one side, jelly on the other.
That's the way I do it too.
Grape or strawberry?
But I do love strawberry.
They're both so good.
I'm a grape guy. So I like both, but I would prefer grape.
You've always liked grapes.
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should know what that means. What's the best meat for a street taco?
Joe?
Steak.
Yeah, I'm a steak guy. You can get a little bit of carne asada is really good as well. Usually not chicken for a street taco, although here's a wild card. I love a good little shrimp and fish street taco, too.
Mm. Yeah, but very good.
Aren't you worried about, like, the freshness? Like, salmonella
Absolutely
or something
not.
On the street?
No. I think about that later.
Oh, I guess evidently you might be forced to.
Deal
I
with the consequences.
I never think about that in foresight.
Yeah,
ever.
I can't. Okay.
I know what Chipotle's, what I'm getting into whenever I go to Chipotle. I never think about that until later.
See,
I deal with that when
I'm Chipotle always drives me right to the commode.
Stu says carnitas. I like carnitas, but I'm probably not going carnitas over steak. Now, he does say barbacoa. And barbacoa, to me, is the best breakfast that you can have. That's my favorite breakfast that there is. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. Someone asking us about Brandon Cooks. Let me find it here. The return isn't great, but did you honestly expect more?
Yeah. I mean, well, at a time I did. I was the one that said, I think we were kicking around a sixth round pick. But, you know, to me, at a certain point, it just gets to where it's addition by subtraction, and you just got to get him out of the building. And with all the young players you're going to continue to add to this roster, I don't think they got enough, but I think that ship had sailed.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this trade at all. Not happy with it. I think it's a very low return that the Texans got. I would have just kept Brandon Cooks if this is all that you're going to get in return for him. Play hardball with him, all of that. But it is what it is. 4-6-8-3. I like two quarterbacks in this draft. But what if Nick and company only believe in one guy and he has gone at one? Do you want them to reach at two with a QB they don't believe in, or take a stud prospect in Will Anderson?
Yeah, no, I've said all along, trust your gut, and they better be zeroed in their gut on one guy. And if they're zeroed in on that guy and he's gone, then you take the best available player on the board, and that would mean that it would be Will Anderson, and it would be a defensive player, and you'd give DeMeco a weapon to work with, or a potential weapon to work with, and then you just have to react accordingly, and hopefully you're in the same type of position a year from now with a different quarterback class, to have guys with less question marks and maybe a better chance of being a can't-miss prospect.
I'm a fan of Will Anderson at number two regardless. So I'm a proponent of drafting Will Anderson at two. I am a proponent of trading out of number two and stockpiling picks, especially if you can get anywhere close to what Carolina or what Chicago got number one from Carolina. Drafting a quarterback at two is actually pretty low on my list. Like, it's third on my list. Will Anderson second, and trading down is number one. Trade down, Will Anderson, quarterback at number two. That's where I'm at with that. 713-780-ESPN. Be handed on Twitch is saying El Tiempo or Nymphas.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a tough question.
That's really tough.
Really, really tough question.
I think I'm going Nymphas. I think El Tiempo is overpriced sometimes.
I'm going to go El Tiempo, I think.
I have to go El Tiempo, too. Their fajitas are unbelievable.
So good.
Their fajitas and their margaritas, which, like, I grade Mexican restaurants on three things. Their fajitas, their chips and salsa, and their margaritas. That's it. I understand that other Mexican restaurants have a lot of great things, but I grade my Mexican restaurants on those three.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't think you can go wrong. Anytime I've been to Nymphas, it's been awesome.
King of Twitch said, both suck, gringos. Delete your account.
Stop
and
it.
Send me my gift card, King of Twitches. You're supposed to buy me some Tex-Mex. Yeah, I win bets against Twitch.
How about just
a
Visa gift
paid.
Card so you can determine where you're going?
He should have. Yeah, all right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Joe George for doing all the hard work, our assistant to the
Good seeing you today, Branham.
For Blank, I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.